This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Great to have you listening today. Last week, we talked about an effort to improve the way local government and regular people do business in Milwaukee through better sharing of data. Another data sharing program is already underway on a larger scale, and there are lives and countries at stake. Linton Wells II is the director of the Center for Technology and National Security Policy for the Institute of National Strategic Studies. It's part of the National Defense University in Washington, D.C. He heads a program called Star Tides. Its mission is to ensure open source information sharing among all the organizations, militaries, diplomats, and NGOs working to support populations under stress, no matter what the cause. Wells was in Milwaukee last week to speak at UWM's Institute of World Affairs, and he joined Bonnie North in the studio then. Wells explained why the work of the diplomatic corps alone is not enough.
Diplomacy inherently is government-centric, and you're dealing with now an explosion of non-governmental actors who are actually able to make positive contributions to the situation. I mean, the last review that Secretary Clinton chartered was called the Quadrennial Development and Diplomacy Review. The Defense Department has a Quadrennial Defense Review. States was the QDDR, Quadrennial Defense and Diplomacy. So the country kind of recognizes this as three stools. Defense, diplomacy, development go together. And clearly in the development, you're dealing with all sorts of actors that are beyond the scope of traditional diplomacy.
Has that three-legged stool not always been a part of policymaking? Because it seems like it's only been relatively recently that people are recognizing, at least publicly, that those three actors need to work together.
So within the Defense Department, between about 2003 and 2007, there were literally tectonic shifts in the way people thought about engaging in these sorts of situations. After the invasion of Iraq, Secretary Rumsfeld chartered a Defense Science Board study as to why it wasn't working out the way they thought it was. And one of the things they found was that defense was spending all of its focus on sort of the kill people and break things phases of conflict. And so out of this came a focus that said defense will accord post-war stability and reconstruction operations the same priority as major combat operations. Huge shift in not only talent being devoted to it, but resources. And then that was 2005. And then 2007, the maritime strategy came out and said that preventing war is as important as winning it. So you've gone in the space of 4 years from just a military that was focused almost entirely on combat operations to a much broader scope. So this past January 2012, the Secretary of Defense issued a guidance that had 10 major missions for the Department of Defense. And four of those were maintaining a stable presence, building partner nation capacity, humanitarian assistance, disaster relief, and defense support of civil authorities, which is domestic disaster relief in the U.S. So defense has oriented itself over the past several years to thinking we have to deal with non-traditional mission participants.
How difficult has that been for the military to make that shift? Not talking on a policy level now, but talking on an actual operational level. Has it been a tough shift in that short a time?
I think so. I mean, and part of it is this is going on at the same time as we're doing the operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so it's clear from those kinds of operations that you have to deal with non-traditional participants. But the enthusiasm, if you will, of the forces for engaging with NGOs and people like that has not probably kept up with the policy. But it's also reciprocal because the non-governmental organizations feel that by associating themselves too closely with the military, that they can be putting their people at risk in the field because they're no longer neutral, they're no longer seen as impartial.
And I would think that those particular challenges would make it tough to have that integrated approach. How does TIDES hope to help this and to make this more feasible in the field?
I spent 14 years as a civilian in the Department of Defense after I retired from the military. And I have to tell you, quite honestly, I got tired of watching men and women die because governments don't do this very well by ourselves. We don't have all the answers. And so at the same time, you get fairly channelized in the senior levels of any kind of an organization. You're the IT person. Why are you worried about water? Why are you worried about power? It must be a power grab type things like that. And so one of the beauties of being at National Defense University is you can do cross-cutting work. You can step back from the pressures of the in-basket and look at, you know, a little farther down the line. And so that's what TIDES tries to take advantage of. And what we found is that the technology is never enough. You need to look at the social, developing the social networks and building trust to get people to work together. You need to understand how to tie policy and doctrine together with the field operating procedures. Because lots of times the policy is fine, the people on the ground don't know what to do. You need to understand the regulatory environment. If we buy something with Defense Department money, can we leave it behind or is that foreign aid? Do we cross some boundary? And then no lesson is ever really learned until behavior changes. You observe a lesson. You come back next year and reobserve the same lesson. You reobserve the same lesson. So how do you train, educate, exercise in order to cause people to do things differently? So that's part of what TIDES is trying to get to.
And how do you do that? What are some of the ways that you have found that are effective in helping people change behaviors?
You know, it's no one thing. And first of all, success in government is the exercise of ruthless persistence. So you never get it right the first time. So you go back and keep trying. But one of the really nice things about TIDES is we get a chance to work not only with a lot of young people, but also with people from very different mindsets. And so the first piece is building the trust. The second is we get to do things like quarterly field experiments. Every quarter out in California, we have a chance to bring the people who set the requirements, the experimenters, the technologists together to say, does this work? And not only does it work, as you said you needed this, but now that you see it, can you really take that and will that be better for you? And it's that dialogue among the different players, I think, that's made a big difference.
Has what you've learned in these exercises, for lack of a better word, been translated into policy? Have people adopted some of these lessons learned?
It has been on several different. In fact, I just finished a paper on the policy implications from these Camp Roberts events, some of which, for example, involve communications. I mean, how do we actually encourage not just the military but the government to recognize that communicating with NGOs and local farmers and businesses is actually in our interest rather than keeping people at arm's length?
And people seem to be agreeable to
so
that.
From a policy level, people seem to be agreeable. Now it gets that second loop of how do you exercise and train to get the people at the ground level to understand what the change in policy is and actually implement it in practice. So it's a continuing – I mean, there's no – you never cross the goal line and spike the ball in this one.
Right. And the other thing I would think, too, that is a challenge is that all of these different organizations have different ways of doing whatever it is that they do. So trying to get them to act in a coherent way that complements each other – sometimes I would think would be like herding cats.
So, you know, basic principle of the military is unity of command. And one of the basic points of TIDES is how do you achieve unity of action when there is no unity of command? Because you will never get, I mean, Haiti with hundreds of NGOs and the State Department and AID and Defense and the UN and whatever. So how do you, as you say, get people to work together? And I was going to say they all want to work together, but they actually don't. They have very different motivating factors. I mean, NGOs have sponsors that they have to be responsible to. The Defense Department focuses on near-term planning. State Department says, okay, after you guys leave, we're going to be around for a long time, so how do we maintain a long-term relationship? So it's not just a question of getting people to work together, but understanding, again, the cultures that different people are coming from and trying to find a way to harmonize.
Do you find that in addition to our own NGOs and that sort of thing, you're also working with international organizations and international militaries and having to apply some of these principles in trying to work with them in particular situations as well?
Absolutely. So the three core approaches in TIDES is leveraging global talent, looking at cross-cutting integrated solutions, and sustaining through the private sector. The Heart of Tides is a network called the Star Tides Network. We have about 1,500 members. They range from Dutch NGOs to the American Red Cross to universities in Singapore to Johns Hopkins to the U.S. Marine Corps. We've tried to make this public-private, whole-of-government transnational. The integrated approaches, I mean, again, one of the core pieces of Tides is how do people die? Too hot, too cold, hunger, thirst, illness, injury. So too hot, too cold is a shelter, heating and cooling problem. Hunger, thirst is a supply chain problem. Illness, injury is a water, sanitation, public health type problem. So we look at 8 infrastructures. We look at shelter, water, power, integrated combustion and solar cooking, heating and cooling, lighting, sanitation, and lots of information and communications technologies. So how do you provide integrated approaches to that so that you use the heat from the cooking to purify the water, and at the same time the cooking can be heating bricks and rocks you can put in the shelters at night so you don't have to have fires in enclosed spaces, things like that?
I would think that just thinking in those terms, most people tend to be very focused. They're specialists in one thing. So to kind of broaden the mind and say, okay, how do I do all of these things? And the fact that it's important to even think about doing all of these things. As you've been doing this now for a while, what are some of the techniques that you found that are most effective in getting all of these different groups to talk to each other and then work together?
So one of the really important things is this piece about trying to sustain through the private sector. In a sense, it does no good to have a bright, shiny object that looks really good in a display field here in the U.S. that's inoperative 6 months after you deploy it. So you have to find something that works in their worlds with their resources that they can sustain in their cultures. And so, first of all, starting with that mindset. It winnows out a batch of people, a batch of organizations who just want to, you know, sell their whatever. The second is, if you're going to do that, you sort of have to sit down, drink the 3 cups of tea with the village elders, understand what it is that they're looking for. There's an organization started in Indonesia, now in Afghanistan, called the National Solidarity Program. And National Solidarity Program is a pot of money that people can draw from. But in order to get it, they have to do 3 things. They have to establish a village council made up representatively of the population of the village. It has to include women, has to include minority groups, so on and so forth. The project has to be voted on by the council, and then all transactions have to be transparent. So all the transactions are posted on the wall, the mayor's house or whatever. It doesn't matter. People can't read, but at least they're up there. And so in Afghanistan, there are something like 35,000 villages, ballpark. There were 22,000 of these National Solidarity Program councils operating a few years ago, and in none of those was there a significant Taliban presence. So you're engaging the population, you're doing something that they want, and it's, again, with their decision-making, their resources. So we've been looking at a project that links telecommunications and reliable power and reach-back information sharing. And say, basically, if you have this village, what would you like to do with it? And how could you sustain it? So if you try to build the sense that it's in everybody's interest for a project, that's kind of the way we've been focused.
Linton Wells II served 26 years as a surface line officer in the U.S. Navy and for 16 years in the office of the Secretary of Defense. He's currently the director of the Center for Technology and National Security Policy for the Institute of National Strategic Studies at the National Defense University in Washington. He was in Milwaukee last week to speak at UWM's Institute of World Affairs about Star Tides, and he spoke with Bonnie North then. The first of 2 interviews about influential filmmakers whose names you might not know comes your way after a break. An important new film by Marian Marzynski airs on PBS tonight, and we'll meet him when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.